Los Espookies is a very odd, very good HBO comedy series about a group of horror-loving friends who start up a business that provides scary experiences for their clients. It's got a deadpan tone and a number of standout performances.
The show is set in an unnamed Latin American country and is largely in Spanish with English subtitles. Los Espookies is co-written by two of its stars, comedians Julio Torres and Ana Fabrega. The second season is airing on HBO right now, so we thought it'd be a good time to revisit our conversation about the first season. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Glenn Weldon, and on this encore episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about Los Espookies. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is Felix Contreras, host of NPR's Alt Latino podcast. Welcome back, Felix.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
And joining us from NPR West is the great Shireen Marisol Meraji, co-host of our younger, hipper sibling podcast, Code Switch. Hey, Shireen.
Hey, I'm so happy to be back. It's been too long.
It has been. Felix, I'm going to start with you. Where did you come down on the lo-fi surreality of Los Espookies?
Loved it. Loved it. Okay. For a whole bunch of reasons, but principally because it's a different kind of humor, right? Obviously, It's Mexican humor. And then more specifically, it's Mexico City humor.
Ah.
Okay. So it's a whole different thing. And it was totally unexpected, right? I didn't know. I saw some trailers. I didn't know what it was about. I'm always a little hesitant. Like, okay, what are they bringing? What are they going to do? I watched it. I was completely floored by it. I loved it. And, you know, the show really draws you in. And I love the characters, man. I was just at a happy hour just a few minutes ago, truth be told, with a bunch of people. And I brought up Los Espookies. Everybody at the table loved it.
Uh-huh.
All these Latino people, the journalists and stuff, they just loved it. It's really, really popular right now.
That's great. Shireen, same question. How'd it hit you?
I'm liking it.
Okay.
You're aware of its work.
Okay.
You know, it's quirky. It's weird. The plot is totally unpredictable, so it keeps me from looking at my Instagram while I'm watching TV. Uh-huh. I'm chuckling, but I'm not, you know, laughing hysterically. Uh-huh. So I'm liking it. I'm not loving it.
Okay. All right. Stephen, what'd you think?
What I hear from Shireen is something that I think this show does well, which it allows you to ride on a wave of amiability a little bit. And I think if you're vibrating at that frequency, that's one way you can enjoy the show. I'm with Felix, though. I loved it. I love this pitch-perfect mixture of dryness and silliness, the number of in-jokes that are woven into these plots. I mean, you've got your central plot, which is about this gaggle of misfits who go around staging scary events for people. And
Allegedly scary
events for people. And you know, obviously wackiness ensues. But then they weave in all these weird in-jokes. The family dog everyone hates.
Uh-huh.
The fact that Ronaldo, the main character, he spells his name without the Y, and he's been haunted by the lack of the Y in his name for his whole life. The fact that Julio Torres, the wonderful performance as Andres, he can watch whatever his boyfriend is doing by looking at a necklace. There's so many threads of weirdness running through this show that is still at the same time extraordinarily amiable. And so at its heart, it's about friendship and following your dreams, even as these goofy, goofy things happen. I was all in on the show from very early.
Okay, because what I'm struggling with is not the show itself, because I am all in on this show. It's I'm struggling with, when I am proselytizing it to people, what to compare it to. Everything about it, as you mentioned, Stephen, is so dry and so deadpan. These characters are almost affectless, but there's this flourish of horror. There's this kind of swoony excess because of the way it leans into the genre elements, the horror elements. So at first I was trying to slot it. Okay, I was thinking, all right, swoony excess plus Spanish language equals telenovela. But that's not it at all.
No.
That is a very lazy kind of way to box it, and also maybe racist adjacent way to box it. So let's move past that, because I think there is no melodrama here. Nobody on the show experiences any kind of intense emotions, which might be another reason why I'm digging it. But what it does do consistently is put magic in a very mundane context. So you've got that necklace Steve had mentioned, which is basically being used as a nanny cam. You've got this parasitic demon who just wants to catch up on the pop culture that they've missed, which, you know, makes it very understandable. At first I thought, okay, this is like What We Do in the Shadows, which again has horror elements mundane.
Yeah.
But that mockumentary thing, it makes it a whole different kind of humor.
Right.
And here, I mean, Jim Jarmusch is a reach. Mm-hmm. He plays in some of the same sandbox. So what did you guys think? Did this show remind you of anything? You said Mexico City humor. What does that mean?
The Mexico City humor stood out to me, but what it reminds me of is Ed Wood.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
right?
All right.
When, especially when you think about the biopic with
Johnny Depp.
Tim Burton.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They're exactly the same kind of fake, really cheesy special effects.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. So I just loved it from the beginning because I loved that film and I love that portrait of the real Ed Wood.
That's a really sharp comparison. And I think it does explain one thing I really loved and hooked into about this show because I have loved Ed Wood's movies since I was a kid.
Right. Yeah.
Shireen, did it remind you of anything that mildly entertained you?
No, it didn't. And I think that we shouldn't compare this to anything. I think we should find new ways to describe this because it's very unique. There is really nothing that I can think of that is like this.
Mm-hmm. And there are different levels, okay? Mm-hmm. One of the things, and Shireen, maybe you can sound off on this. One of the things I really, really love about it is the Chilango slang.
My God, I love that.
Mexico City slang, because the
Bernardo Velasco is,
oh my gosh,
is doing that. He plays Renaldo, mm-hmm. and he is doing all of the Mexican slang. No manches.
Every other word is no manches and way. And so to explain, right, way means ox.
Okay.
It's a barnyard animal. All right. But it's like saying dude. Huh. Okay. Ah, no, hey, way. ¿Qué hiciste? What'd you do? No way. You know, like everything is way. So I hear that all the time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a funny aside, like Mexicans love calling each other barnyard animals because there's way and there's cabrón, which is like a goat. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but way is part of this vernacular. And there's a line in the series early on that cracked me up. They're gathering something and somebody says, "Are you hungry?" Right? And it's all in Spanish. And Reynaldo says, "Me de hambre." It's like saying, "I myself from hunger." Okay? But it makes no sense, right? But that's part of the Mexico City slang. You would hear that all the time. I just love hearing that. So there's all these different things happening language-wise.
I could tell there were layers. There were a couple of references to accents. Like somebody says something that's like, "Why are you speaking with that accent?" And it's like, "Well, I was in Minnesota for 2 weeks."
Yeah.
And I, a non-Spanish speaker, was sitting there like, I bet there is something in the way that she is delivering these lines that is jumping out to Spanish language
audiences. That's Ana Fábregas Tati. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Shireen, let me ask you. Okay, so this show is largely in Spanish with English subtitles, which means this schmuck here, this monolingual English-speaking schmuck, actually had to shudder to think, watch it.
Yes. Wonderful. I mean, I did too. The Spanish is so rapid fire that I caught myself cheating a bunch of times reading the subtitles.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fast. The dialogue is just so fast. And it is so deadpan that if you do look away, you know, you might miss it. Or if you're not quite knowing all the nuances in Spanish, which I don't, you know, I'm still learning.
Sure.
I definitely had to read the subtitles. The thing that I loved about the language in this and the Spanish, piggybacking on what Felix said, was that there's all different kinds of Spanish accents. It's not just Mexico City slang. You know, it is from everywhere. Ana Fábregas from Panama. I think Julio Torres is from El Salvador. So you hear like all different kinds of Spanish. And Spanish is so normalized. It's like it's nothing. It's just completely normal, which I was very much drawn to. It definitely made me like this show.
And I will say, Shireen, like, I didn't find myself laughing hysterically, right? I don't know that it's that kind of show, right?
Yeah.
I think it's more like we've been talking about.
Chuckle.
There's all these, chuckle, clever.
That's smart.
Really,
that's
like,
clever.
Yeah, I like that.
For me, it was smiling delightedly.
Right. See, because we are experiencing the show, Stephen, as something that is primarily a reading experience supported by performances.
Right.
Right. So that makes, there's an intellectual disconnect that's happening where it's not intuitive. And they don't subtitle like a show like One Day at a Time in English. They don't subtitle Vita in English. So scenes will go on and people will be arguing and we just get, oh, they're arguing.
Right.
I know that, I get that they're angry. They do subtitle on Jane the Virgin when characters speak only Spanish and we give them English subtitles.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of Easter eggs for Latinx people who are watching it. One is Yerba Light which is this pyramid scheme. You know, subplot in the story, some of the characters get caught up selling this stuff called Yerbalite, which is an obvious stand-in for Herbalife, which is a Los Angeles-based company that would be nothing without its Latino clientele.
Right.
So if you are Latino, Latinx, you get that joke. Mm-hmm. That's a joke directed toward you, which I love.
Well, let's talk about the use of Fred Armisen here. Uncle Tico, who lives apart from the main characters, the four main characters. He's a parking valet in L.A. Who is uncannily good at parking, which is another kind of represents the weirdness of the show. Mundane detail with a little magic thrown in. It was Armisen who actually pitched the premise of the show to HBO. And when they bought it, and Felix, it was actually originally called Mexico City, Only Good Things Happen.
There you go.
After that, he brought in Torres and Fabrega to co-write the first episode. And then he basically handed the writing off to them. I think the subsequent episodes are better than the pilot. I think we get just enough Armisen here. When he's on screen, he's great. He's funny. He's dry. He's low-key. What did you guys think of how the show used him? Shireen?
I thought that Tico, the amazing valet parking attendant, was very throwback 90s sketch comedy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all remember Culture Clash. Were this Chicano sketch comedy troupe. They had a TV show in the 90s.
I remember them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So they did this skit, and it was all about Mexican superheroes. And they had, you know, Leaf Blower Man and Orange Cellar Man, and they had Bus Boy Man. And the whole point was to say, these are our superheroes and they don't get recognized and their jobs are so hard. And I just felt like Fred Armisen's character was like, you know, parking valet attendant man. Mm. It just felt like a joke that was tired and kind of 90s. I mean, don't get me wrong, I laughed, mm-hmm. but I was also like, should I be laughing at this?
I totally get you, because that is a moment where, yeah, should I be laughing at, like, the parking attendant thing, right? It's like, is it insulting? Is it not insulting?
Yeah.
But I got to say, you know, when I put it in the context of Fred Armisen, like, he was doing, and I may still be doing, this comedy website where he's actively supporting other Latino comics. I know, and I've read articles, that he is very active.
No, he's supportive. So down.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's not down. It just felt dated to me, Felix. The joke felt dated, whereas everything else kind of felt fresh. That was my critique. I know this is a love fest, but I'm sitting here.
It's more a like fest where you're coming from.
I'm with you, though. I had to think about, okay, is this really funny? But I went with Fred Armisen. I just went with him.
Yeah.
Like you said, he's down. He's shown where his allegiances are, where his heart is. So I just followed it.
Yeah.
And I like that he's not there all the time, because it's like he's supportive, right?
Right.
Let's use the name to bring in people to watch this, and then you guys don't look at me, look at you guys, look at these other guys, because they're the funny ones.
Yeah, Steven. He feels less woven into the plot as it goes along. They almost could just kind of drop him out. I mean, they're clearly building to something with him, but he is not why I am enthusiastic about this show.
The reason I am is Ana Fabrega's Tati. She is one of the four main Espookies. She's got this blank expression, this terrible wardrobe, these newsboy caps that I can't get enough of. Her character is very, very dim-witted, but capable of these surprising insights that happen on the show, like some wire in her brain crosses and all of a sudden she's glitched.
Right.
She is my favorite thing about the series. How about you guys? What other characters are you digging?
I love Andres. Yeah. I love his story of being dropped off at an orphanage and then adopted and raised by rich chocolatiers. I just think I want a spinoff of just that. Him, Juan Carlos, you know, his family trying to marry him off to his boyfriend and get that, you know, cookie chocolate alliance thing going on. I love that.
Yeah. I think he is the most fully realized character.
Is.
The funniest, the most mysterious. I do also love poor, dumb Tati. but Andres is the one that I'm really, really sunk into.
I like Ronaldo.
Yeah.
I like Ronaldo because because of his enthusiasm for doing horror. When you watch the show, you understand why he's into horror and what it helped him cope with as a child and why he's so passionate about it. You know, he hopes to have hit the big time sometime, but he's in the meantime doing the stuff that they're doing on the show.
I love that you're sticking up for Ronaldo because he could be easily missed because he's not flashy the way the others are. That's his whole character, is that he's not flashy, but he's really kind of driving the show. But I also got to put in a hand for Ursula, who is the most competent of the Spookies. I love that she's there.
Who remembers to charge for their
services. Who
remembers
to charge person. Yeah. She also has got this weird thing where she trusts no one and she's usually right. I kind of dig that too.
What I think is interesting, and put it in a larger context of when you look at the humor and you look at what producers and what these outlets are doing to try to reach out to the Latino audience primarily, but then the broader audience in general. Think about it. There's three comedies, One Day at a Time. Iglesias with Gabriel Iglesias, which is basically a sitcom with a laugh track with a heart of gold. And then Alter Latino on Comedy Central with Arturo Castro. They're all different takes on humor, and they're all very, very interesting ways of reaching different segments of the audience, which reflects, again, that the Latino audience, the Latino demographic, is not monolithic. Right. And everything is going to be a little different. I mean, I can't remember a time, Shireen, when you have this much, these at least comedy shows like this, with these different takes on comedy. It's interesting and fascinating to me.
Yeah, and one all in Spanish.
Even the English is subtitled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
And on HBO.
That's pretty dope.
We want to know what you think about Los Espookies. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced and edited by Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.